IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Some of your comments coming in following our conversation with Leo Varadkar. I just want to be clear on something, by the way. It's off the back of a comment someone sent in, but I think most people get it. here it is. It reads like this. It's funny why you ask the same questions as Virgin Media this morning regarding the referendum. Leo has his lines well rehearsed for that. Now, we are bound by rules here in that we're not advocating for a yes or a no. We have to, in the round, now it's not always going to be right, a yes and then a no, or a no and then a yes, to give people a right to express their point of view in relation to this. So if I challenge Leo Varadkar particularly difficult on that, and then I interview someone from AIM2, for an example, tomorrow, as we will, to all different parties or people to try and strive balance, and then sort of give them an easy interview or what have you, well, then you see that's not seen to be fair or balanced. There are media organisations, particularly ones that aren't guided by necessarily the same rules that radio stations are, that they can sort of adopt in a position. It can be a no, no, or a yes, yes. We can't really do that. We have to give fair hearing to all, whether people want to hear Leo Varadkar or not. Ask some of the key I only asked some of the key questions that I'm seeing the public ask, as it relates to the vagueness of it, the where carers go, what's just defined as a carer, inside or outside the home, whether or not, you know, about the removal of the word mother rather than maybe adding something in. But I can't sit here and sort of go, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. This is an attack on this, that and the other. That will happen in debates. No more so when someone says, to vote no because of such and such reason, that I can't sit there and argue with them. I can sort of ask questions and what have you. It sounds lame, I know that. There's lots of questions and stuff I'd like to drill down in. But, you know, it's not always possible. And there are obvious questions to this. And many of the questions are unanswerable. And if you listen to those behind the referendum, those charged with just informing the public as to what this actually means, a lot of the time the answer is well, that will be determined by the courts. So I then can't start with a yes, yes, start talking about how this might be interpreted by the courts down the line, okay, because there's no real way then to sort of probe in the same direction with a no, no, if that makes sense. Anyway, when you're talking, you're losing, they say. I respect what this listener says. I appreciate them texting in. That's why it's read out, and that's why I tried to address it. Leo says the laws about family children was written in the 30s by people born in the 1800s. Don't we have lots of laws written then? Ask him about the vague wording of the hate speech law that 70% poll don't want, but they're pushing through anyway. It was about the referendum. We vote no because our ruling parties want us to vote yes. It's a terrible state of affairs that we can't and don't trust our politicians. You would have no dealings with someone you didn't trust, yet we are governed by them. Ask Leo about dual relations, as Minister Byrne couldn't answer that when when it's not Padraig Tobin from AIM2. My word, his first name's Padder Tobin. Okay, that said Padraig, it's Padder, of course. As for the carers, it means all nursing homes could be closed. Families be responsible for their own. Removing women is to accommodate the Muslims, I believe, a caller. Women's not being removed. The word mother is. Women still referred to in the Constitution. Nursing homes are big business now. Are they going to force them closed? I don't know. How much care is provided privately? I can't see it happening. But anyway, that's your view. And also, I did also ask the question about dual relations. That was one of the questions that I did ask. It's very sad to see mothers are of no relevance as far as this government is concerned. That comes in from Mary Doherty. Will you ask Leo Varadkar if he's able to define what a woman actually is? I don't understand much about it, but is this referendum a bit woke? Well, some would say the language is trying to be more inclusive, and some people see things as more inclusive as going woke. So I presume that could be argued one way or other as well. Leo must be worried about Donegal retiring a no vote when he made time to come on the local radio. I'd say they're doing the rounds, and we were offered him and we accepted the invite just to ask him about that, and as I say, just to be sure that we're seen to be as fair as is possible. So I'm sure all the party leaders are doing the rounds on local radio stations. But it's, listen, Donegal, it's probably likely that Donegal will return a no. You know, we do buck the trend often, and as I say, it's probable. I would suggest. Okay, just before the break, I want to reference the St. Joseph story that I cut off just as we were going to Leo Varadkar, because obviously, as we know, we learned at short notice and brought it to you just as soon as we learned that primary care physiotherapy is being moved out of St. Joseph's Hospital. When will it return to St. Joseph's Hospital? Well, according to this press release from the HSE, never. They're looking for an alternative location. When will that location, alternative location, be found and primary care physiotherapy to be provided in the locality? There's no answer to that. It's an ongoing process. So they say, following a recent HICWA inspection in St. Joseph's Hospital, Stranorlar, and an identified need for essential fire upgrade works to be undertaken, primary care physiotherapy will relocate to alternative accommodation with immediate effect. From Monday, the 26th, primary care physiotherapy services will be delivered from Donegal Town Community Hospital for patients in Alt the Paste, Clohan Capri, Goland, Knock and Stranorlar ED areas, Lifford Community Hospital for patients in Convoy, Glenealy, Killigordon and Drumkeen ED areas. From Tuesday the 27th of February, you're asked to contact 9740623 to speak to a physiotherapist. Occupational therapy services are a home-based service and will not be affected by this move. Now, the services are communicating with affected service users, advising on which centre to attend for appointment and notifying all other stakeholders of the relocation. They haven't done it, they're doing it. They say work is ongoing to secure suitable, appropriate accommodation in the Finn Valley area to enable services to be restored as soon as possible. So there's no reference to these services ever returning to St. Joseph's Hospital. The only reference the HSE has made is that they are seeking appropriate accommodation in the Finn Valley area. There is no time frame on that. So that is the official response from the HSE in that regard. Now, Professor Oliver Fitzgerald is a consultant rheumatologist at UCD and co-lead of the HPOS study, which we're about to discuss now. Good morning, Professor. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on your show.
Right. The study is hoping to understand links between psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. So from your learned position, describe the two conditions and why there seems to be enough of a connection or a link to justify such a study.
Sure. Okay, psoriasis people may well be familiar with. It's a common skin rash that affects 2 to 3% of the population. So that translates into 3,400 approximately in Donegal. The rash is a scaly, itchy, red rash, commonly found on the areas like the scalp, the backs of the elbows, the fronts of the knees, can affect the nails, and can affect the whole skin in severe cases. The skin, you can see it and you know what's going on. But what people don't realize is that psoriasis can be associated with a number of underlying problems. So these include things like depression and anxiety is not uncommon in people with psoriasis. But it also includes arthritis. So about 1 in 3 people with psoriasis will develop a form of arthritis, which we call psoriatic arthritis. And this form of arthritis is unusual in the sense that it can affect the joints, but it can also affect other parts of the musculoskeletal system. So it can affect, for example, the sites of attachment of ligaments to bone. So places like the Achilles tendon, where it's attached to the back of your heel, can become inflamed. It can cause sausage-like swelling of the digits. This is known as dactylitis, and that occurs in about 30%. And it can also be associated with spinal inflammation. So people can wake up feeling stiff and sore in the morning in their back, and that can be associated with psoriatic arthritis as well.
So it's pretty much accepted, I take it then, that there is a link between these two conditions. Is it, and this is the aim of the study, it's not necessarily fully understood as to why some people may go on to develop this type of arthritis and others may not. What are the sort of common factors? And if we learn that, maybe we can try and prevent this type of arthritis developing.
Yes, that's exactly what this study is trying to address. We don't know which one of the three people with psoriasis is going to develop psoriatic arthritis. We know it occurs more commonly in people who have, say, nail changes. We know that it occurs in people who are overweight. It may be associated with excess alcohol intake, and it certainly runs in families, so there is a genetic component to it as well. But none of these factors are specific enough to enable us to identify which of the three people is going to get psoriatic arthritis. So what we're doing with this study is this is a European study. It's run from UCD and University of Oxford. It's a study of 25,000 people with psoriasis across Europe. And Ireland is being asked to recruit 2,000 people with psoriasis. So it's easy enough to sign up to the study. If you have psoriasis, if you don't have psoriatic arthritis, and if you're over the age of 18, you're eligible to sign up to the study. And taking part in the study will involve filling in some questionnaires at baseline and every 6 months for a 3-year period.
Is 3 years long enough?
Quite possibly not. So some patients may have the psoriasis for up to 10 years before they develop the psoriatic arthritis. And our intention would be, if we can obtain the additional funding required to continue this study, and I'm confident that we will get the additional funding to allow us to continue, because I think it's a very important study and will, I think, allow us to identify both clinical factors associated with the development of psoriatic arthritis, but we're also looking at blood-based factors, so proteins or metabolites in the blood that seem to predict the development of psoriatic arthritis. So I think it'll be an important study, and I'm confident that we will identify risk factors that will be sensitive and specific enough to allow us to potentially, as you say, conduct a clinical trial to prevent the disease, which would be the holy grail in lots of ways.
And it is an opportunity for some to take part in something really quite important, something that will potentially make the lives of others in this generation, next generation, and generations that follow better. It's often sometimes lost, I think, in these conversations, what people, if they can spare the time and the relatively small commitment, the impact that can have on other people's lives.
Yeah, no, that's precisely it. I think certainly if we do succeed, and I think we will, in identifying risk factors for the development, it will certainly help others, but it will also help people participating, because this isn't, the information isn't one way, if you like. We will be feeding back information to the participants. If it looks, from analyzing their questionnaires, if it looks like they're developing features that suggest the development of psoriatic arthritis, we will advise them of this and advise them to seek a medical assessment.
And just in terms of who takes part, would it be beneficial for it to be countrywide, like climate, you know, geographical location, are they potentially factors? I know it certainly is in certain arthritis. I'm not sure if it's in this form of arthritis, but I presume the broader the sample from around the country, the better.
The broader the sample, the better. And we will, as you know, as I mentioned, we will have other countries participating.
Yes.
So other climates and so on will be participating.
That's
in
true,
in the
yeah.
study. So we will gather information on that as well. And it's possible that other factors like diet and exercise and those kind of factors may be important in the development of the disease.
Yes, I think you have to be open and transparent, even if sometimes some of the information is a little uncomfortable. That's how these things work. Finally, Professor, just to if people are interested, maybe want a little bit more information before signing up to the study, how do they go about doing so?
Well, it's very simple. All they need to do is to go into www.hpos.study. They will get all the information they need when they go online there. They can register there. They can provide their consent to participate there online. And that'll open up into the questionnaires that they can then fill out. So it doesn't take long, but it does take a commitment to provide the baseline and 6 monthly questionnaires.
Delighted to welcome into studio David Regan, Concern CEO. Good morning, David. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. And Eta Ward from the Twin Towns Group, Eta. Am I all right? Am I good?
Good morning. Yes.
Good to have you with us. Lovely to have you with us. And I'll come to you in a moment, Eta. David, just to give us an idea of the work that Concern does. And I suppose, you know, it's astonishing, I think, in the small part of the northwest of Ireland that, you know, so much effort is put in, and most of it spearheaded by Eta here in contributing to the, you know, the fundraising drive of Concern and the work that it does. It really is quite remarkable. Isn't it what humans do for others?
It is remarkable. It really is. And this group here is an inspiration to us all. I mean, it's a very small community, 5,000 or 6,000 people, and they have raised over €1 million, €1.1 million in the 40 years of sticking with it. And 40 years goes back a long time. And as it happens, purely coincidentally, myself and Eta first met in Ethiopia in 1985, which is almost 40 years ago when there was a famine there.
And, hold on your second.
And 1985 we met in Ethiopia. We were both, it was just coincidental. So we were, there was a famine there then, and people were raising funds in Stranraer, in Ballybofey for Concern. And that has continued. And it's amazing, as you say, people have reached out all through all these years to all these different communities, whether it's an earthquake in Haiti, whether it's a war in Ukraine, whether it's an earthquake in Turkey, whether it's a conflict in Ethiopia or a drought in Somalia. They've reached out, and for Concern, for us, what we do essentially is we support those people in need. We support them in terms of food, in terms of water, and in terms of health, in terms of the mother and child care and basic provision of health. And then we try to support the communities to grow their livelihoods. That's what we do.
How important is it when the public are donating that they see it? You know, you referenced Ethiopia there, and it was, you know, people were aware of it. And it's sometimes some work that Concern does. It's easier to articulate and people have a better understanding of it. But when you start then talking about maybe a war in Ethiopia or what have you, you know, when we don't necessarily see it as such, it's not on the news cycle. Does that become a challenge in terms of fundraising? Like, it's easier for us as givers to sort of make a connection between what we know?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge at the moment, because unfortunately the world has declined, has descended into a lot of conflict. So there's a lot of coverage right now on Gaza, which is a shocking situation. For us in Concern, we're also looking at other conflicts. Sudan is probably the biggest on our horizon. There's 7 million people displaced as a result of the civil war that broke out in April. There's 24 million people who will need a humanitarian help. In other words, they haven't got shelter or food or water in Sudan in 2024. It gets no coverage. Mm-hmm. It's not anywhere on the news. It's a massive crisis. We're heading towards a catastrophic situation in terms of hunger. It's a challenge for us.
In terms of giving too, I just think the world's a different place to would have been in the mid-80s. You know, people maybe are more cynical as to the cause of war, who benefits from war, you know, maybe cynicism of world leaders, sort of the selective outrage that we see. Is it difficult for you to sort of say, right, okay, you can have those views, that's fine, maybe some of them are based in truth or not, but fundamentally what does happen when men do bad things is we have victims and we have to help those victims. So sometimes maybe you have to park the criticism or cynicism you have as to what led to these situations and focus on the victims of that. And they could be double, treble victims if what people believe is true. They still need assistance and they still need help. But is that a challenge?
It is a challenge. I mean, the groups like the group in Ballybofey are an instance of people thinking about a human-to-human connection. So for us as Concern, we're not trying to resolve the broader political tensions that emerge. We're dealing with the product of those conflicts or of the impact of climate change. And it truly is a human-to-human response. So when somebody in Ballybofey is giving money to us, what that means in terms of the end product is giving somebody something as simple as a water can when they've just been displaced from Sudan, they've carried their clothes and their children on their back, they've arrived somewhere and they have nothing. Are giving them some shelter, are giving them some cash to enable them to go and buy some food. It's literally that human to human. contact that you're creating. But it's difficult for people to understand that. And it's difficult to understand the scale and the level of need that exists.
Yeah, I want to come back to you on that, but I want to bring ET in here too, because I mean, there's a couple of things. First and foremost, I'll speak to you about you know why you got involved in this, but just to give that number again, 1.22 million euro raised for concern over the last four decades from such a small community. It's a massive amount of money. I mean, we are a dot on the head of a pin Ireland, let alone globally. It must be. Well, firstly, talk to the people's generosity.
Well, exactly. It's the word generosity. Like, it started very simply. A public health nurse from the Twin Towns was going to work with Concern for 6 months. Beth Lane, she was in Cambodia and Yemen previous to that. And her fiancé at the time was very upset, John Jackson, that she was leaving for 6 months. So his friend said, we'll keep you busy. We'll do something. And they thought, we'll fundraise for Concern for the 6 months that Beth was away. So Beth came back and they thought, you know, we'll continue because the problems were still great in Ethiopia and other places. So it started developed then into four main events per year. And those four main events are still going. And it is people every year turning up for those events. It is young people coming to help us with the bazaar and the carol singing. It is people from the community. It is, and people do talk about the person-to-person contact, but it's also the community-to-community. You know, they're very curious about what is happening in different parts of the world in communities about the size of Ballybofeist or Norla 5 or 6,000 or whatever. So we have a spring sale coming up now, as we do every year, after Easter, on the Saturday after Easter. And people will, with just a gentle reminder in the local papers or the local media, they will bring stuff to a local parish hall on the Friday evening, and we will sell them on the Saturday morning and make a few thousand for Concern. And then local churches, we do the Churchgate collection on the Sunday in September that Concern has the license for. And then the big event is the bazaar on the first Sunday in December. And again, we get the venue free from a local hotel. We had a great bazaar this year. We get support from businesses. Every business in the town gives us something. It might be a voucher from a hairdresser's for 20 or 40 euro. It might be something very big, a very big item that we can use as a first prize. And we have 20 rounds of ticket selling. And we start and finish within 3 hours. And I'm not sure of the figure. I think it was around 12,000 or 14,000 this
and,
year.
And also in terms of giving or helping, it does, we are in a cost of living crisis. Things are tight. But people can help in different ways and do help in different ways. It could be donating items. I'm on about sort of private citizen. It could be helping in terms of selling tickets or what have you.
Of course.
So even if people aren't very well resourced, and many aren't here, there are ways too that you can help. And I'm sure it's very rewarding. You would get that feedback from those that help you.
Yes. There are under 20 in our group, in the Twin Towns Concern Support Group. But we would have dozens of other people that turn up for each of those events. The spring sale, the same people go to sell the books or the bric-a-brac or the household items or the new clothes. The same people turn up every year to do that. People turn up to help people bring stuff home to clean up after the event. Again, for the bazaar, there is a lot of work in the bazaar. We get a premises with a window free of charge, and the stuff has to be moved then on the Sunday morning from there to the hotel. We have the same people turning up every year with vans and helping us to move the stuff. And then ticket sellers, we have young people. We had, I think it was 22 this year from the schools in the Twin Towns, and one or two from a school in the college in Letterkenny.
Have you got your head around the fact that this is a 40th year anniversary, that trip to Ethiopia in the mid 80s, here we are 40 years. I mean, to celebrate anything, a 40 year anniversary of anything is really quite remarkable. Of course, to have David here as Concern CEO, but it's remarkable. Do you have to pinch yourself, as I say, that it's 40
years?
It is. Years
I moved back to Donegal 24 years ago, so there are many others who were there 40 years ago, many of them, and it is a long time, and they have great stories to tell. You know, it's a great social, there are great social events as well as fundraising events, so we get a lot out of it ourselves.
Yeah, of course, as do the people around the world. And David, that's it too. You know, like, every country has its challenges. We have our challenges here, of course, but sometimes we can be, and maybe we're getting a little bit more national, and it's not just here, right across the country. We don't really, I think, or can't get our heads around, or choose not to get our heads around, the difference that people have in different parts of the world. How many people can't feed themselves? Even something as simple as access to the internet, how few people actually globally have access to the internet, the life that people are leading, the impact climate changes, whatever's causing it, we're not having that debate, right? But the difference that the climate is having in terms of driving more people into, they can't farm the land, they can't live where they are and what have you, it's huge. Can you give us any idea of the scale of those that live like we do, with all the faults, and those that have very little or nothing?
Yeah, the numbers are really quite frightening, and they're kind of hard to get your head around, as you say. I mean, they reckon this year about 750 people will suffer from food insecurity. What that fundamentally means...
750 million?
Million, 750 million. Which that means at some stage through the year, they will be hungry. Some of them are in a very acute stage where there's
malnutrition. Let's figure again. 750 million people in the world.
So there's,
this year,
there's 5 billion in the people, people in the world. 750 million will be food insecure at some stage in the year. And then within that, there are various levels of malnutrition. I suppose the most worrying is children. If children don't get adequate nutrition, they become what the medical term is stunted. In other words, their growth in terms of both mentally and physically is reduced. And that's a huge problem for the whole world. And the number has grown. It's a little, as I said, myself and Ita met in Ethiopia 40 years ago. As it happened, I went back to the same town that we lived in for 2 years. It was very remote at the time. It was very, very, a very difficult famine situation. I went back in 2017. It was tremendous. The progress that had been made in that little town was huge.
Presumably then part of that, though, is you enable people. You know, and a lot of the conversation is about migration too, but there are great organisations that actually tool people up to live where they want to live, often where their country is, but to equip them to farm the land, to feed themselves, to grow crops, whatever it might be, improve education, which improves outcomes and what have you. And you've seen that. You've seen that firsthand from 85 to 2017.
We have seen that. And sadly, it's going the wrong way because of conflict and climate in the last 6-7 years. It is very worrying. And the climate one is not one that is going to seemingly stop soon. I mean, if you talk to countries in the Horn of Africa, they will tell you that the livelihood of their pastoralists is going to disappear.
And we're not talking about where we see a wet summer here and say, oh, well, sure, that's climate crisis. And then someone says, well, should there always been wet summers? When we talk about climate change in these parts of the world, it's completely
dramatic.
Different.
It's dramatic. It's dramatic. So I mean, last year I was in Somalia, northern Kenya. They had missed 5 rainy seasons. So that's 5 seasons where there should have been rain. There was no rain. So that would effectively meant 2.5 years of no rain. So the ground was completely dry. This year there was some rain, but it was floods. And the ground was completely flooded. So your very extreme circumstances have arisen. There have always been instances of drought in that part of the world, but not the level of extremity that we see.
You talked about that figure of 750 million over the course of the year that will suffer from food insecurity, i.e. no access to food at some point over the year. Then there's access to basic medicines. Again, other stuff that we possibly take for granted. People shouldn't feel guilty. I'm not trying to say there's a hierarchy of feelings here, but the truth is that, you know, there's an awful lot of stuff that we complain that we can't get quite as quickly as we like, that many, many people around the world simply will never see.
We'll never see. No, it's true. And I mean, I think it's important we don't feel overwhelmed because it is overwhelmed. I mean, at the end of the day, if we take the Twin Towns Group, they have raised an enormous sum of money. It's made an enormous difference for a very large group of people. That's a success. Has it solved everything? No.
No, of course not.
But it's made a huge difference. Humans have reached out to humans, and the people, I mean, I have the privilege of meeting those who we work with. It really does make a difference that they're not forgotten, that they're not abandoned, that people have come to help. It makes a huge difference.
And you speak to people that have made the trips that you have. They change forever. Even maybe they're a bit cynical or sceptical or hard as nails or whatever their background is they change forever after seeing it for themselves firsthand. What's coming up then? Sorry, you've mentioned it. You've plugged away because you're a professional and you used the opportunity not to talk of yourself, but to plug every bloody thing that's coming up. But just to recap, Ita, so what's the next thing?
The spring sale will be coming up on the 6th of April in Stranorlar. So we're looking forward to that. But as David says, you know, the scale is huge. It is challenging. It is daunting. But David sent me photographs of that little town that we worked in called Bedessa. And to see the change, a town about 5,000 or 6,000 of a population.
Yeah, same as yours.
Same as ours. Mm. And like it wasn't our money that directly went there. But it's a concerns work there that resulted in huge development of a community. And I don't think Concern are working in that.
No, it's not necessary there anymore. We've moved to other parts.
Okay. both of you, thank you very much indeed. Are you doing anything to celebrate the 40th anniversary?
We will be. We just haven't made those plans just yet, but we will later in the year. It was later in the year that Beth went.
All right.
And Concern are also celebrating 40 years of the debates, and the local schools here contribute to that as well. Mm-hmm. School debates.
Yep, St. Columbus
Primary
College,
and secondary.
Finn College, all helping with the stuff that you talked about, bazaars and carol singings and what have you, and other schools as well.
Yeah.
David Regan, Concern CEO, thank you so much for joining us.
Ita
Ward from the Twin Towns Concerns Group. Remarkable. 1.22 million raised for Concerns. Raised for Concern, an incredible achievement from a community of a little over 5,000 over the last 4 decades. And long may it continue. Both of you, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
We had some contact to suggest that some people were being laid off or paid off from Randox, a huge employer in Donegal. We didn't want to say anything until such time as we got a formal response. So we said, we understand you're announcing payoffs or layoffs in your Donegal branch this morning. So this is hot off the press for you here. And in fairness to Randox, they came back quite quickly with a response, and it reads as follows. A Randox spokesperson said, Randox have reviewed the structure of the manufacturing engineering department located at our Dunloe facility. The review was necessary to ensure efficiency of production and has resulted in 7 positions within the manufacturing engineering department provisionally identified for redundancy. A consultation process is currently underway. The affected staff may apply for positions elsewhere within Randox for which they are still recruiting. Randox, they say, remains committed to its facility in Dunloe, where key engineering, manufacturing and R&D projects are undertaken. Randox Dunloe remains a core element of the Randox infrastructure. So two things there, acknowledging that 7 positions are being made redundant, but also committing to the facilities in Dunloe, because some might say, right, well, is this the start of it? And they have used that last paragraph, I think, perhaps to allay any of those fears. Question for the Taoiseach. Read the referendum in the provision of care. Why is it only family members being included here when there are lots of people who are non-family members who take care of people? And put that to the Taoiseach, and he said, fair point. Why does the family have to be asked about all of the constitution? Why does the public, I presume, is what you mean there. Could you ask Leo Varadkar why himself and his party are putting so much effort into this referendum and how they're keeping so quiet about Israel murdering 8,000 children, 20,000 Palestinians? It seems more important to get people to vote in something that has no importance over the killing of so many people and still doing it. And some might say the Irish government is doing it, not doing enough, but it is doing more than other governments around the world. That's what I'm just saying, some people might say. But your point is that you believe they're not doing enough and focusing too much on referenda that aren't important. That's your view and I respect it. Okay. Quick break to catch up on because I wanted to give plenty of time to Concern there. And we'll be back with the news headlines.